All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View here on BBS Radio for Monday, November 22nd. In fact, it was 47 years ago today that the CIA did not whack President Kennedy. I'm your host, PK, and I'll be with you for the next hour, and I'd like to thank my friend Don Nikoloff for helping me to produce this show. Don, are you out there?
I'm out there. I'm way out there.
Yeah. Well, I am too. And how you doing?
I'm good. Hope the sound is good for you.
It's very clear, and I hope it's good for our listeners.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. If it sounds clear for us, it's great for them.
Well, that's good. That's good. And as you know, today is the anniversary of the Kennedy assassination. And it's interesting how people are still wondering who did it and how they did it or why. And in a nutshell, I believe it was heavily done with the CIA, and it was because Kennedy had sort of turned from more of a hawk to a dove, and he stood up to the CIA and the military-industrial complex.
I agree with you. And, you know, I'm going to sit back, and I'm going to listen to you go into this, okay?
Well, actually, thank you. I wasn't really going to go into it much because I haven't studied it much, but you know, how many out there, it's a classic CIA type thing. Of course, Oswald was the patsy. He could have been involved, but, you know, at the end, bang, you're the patsy. And then, you know, one arm doesn't know, this hand doesn't know what the other hand's doing, and there he's stuck. And, you know, seems like they played him for this all along, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Well, I know a lot about the whole thing.
Yeah, but I mean, I haven't studied it as deeply as you and others, but am I, in a nutshell, am I pretty darn close?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because who else could do that? I mean, the CIA has got their tentacles and everything. And, you know, of course, and it's all wrapped up in patriotism. Their tentacles, I didn't realize this till a few years ago, their tentacles are deep in the universities, deep in the media. Where else are they? They're heavily infiltrated in these institutions, and they've probably staged they've been involved in the anti-war riots of the 60s and this and that. So, you know, they're way deep in everything. And of course, it's always wrapped up in patriotism. They're serving their country. They're doing this. They're doing that. Meanwhile, those of us who know better, as sad as we are about it, we're still laughing like, yeah, right, right. You know?
Yeah, I would say you could add religion and the military-industrial complex as well.
Oh, they're hand-in-hand together.
And then the banks, of course.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So there you have it. In a nutshell, they cooperate together. And even they might – well, even the underlings probably don't know how interconnected they are. Not CIA underlings per se, but just citizens who work in these institutions who believe that they're serving our country's good and they're being patriotic.
Mm-hmm.
But I did want to talk about going on from the Kennedy assassination, which is, again, something I'm not really fit to. It's not something I'm going to expound on because I am not that informed about it. But thank you for concurring that. In a nutshell, I'm pretty much on the mark. I want to speak about my outrage about a few things, and the one thing I'm getting that I think is quite funny is the nerve of the DEA, which, by the way, stands for Department of Eggheads and A-Holes, the DEA. How, I don't know if you saw the guy, 60 Minutes last night, he was this shaven-headed fella, blue eyes, apple pie and Chevrolet, saying how the DEA, they nailed this Russian arms dealer. Do you know about this fella?
I actually didn't listen to that broadcast. I try not to, but that's just my...
Right, right. But I mean, if you had heard about this anyway, it's a big deal. They caught this evil Russian arms dealer who supplied third world, you know, countries in Africa and probably terrorists too with you know, there's a lot of inventory in Russia that he's able to get a hold of, RPGs and all these type of things, probably SAMs, you know, AK-47s, you know, this type of stuff.
Well, you said he supplies them to the terrorists, so we're back to the CIA again.
Well, and he has a fleet of planes. Well, it is Russian-made equipment. My point is, even if the CIA is not involved, for the DEA and our federal government to come down on this guy like they caught this big evil arms merchant, when they represent the federal government, which has armed all these other countries and done all these other things, the hypocrisy makes me laugh because Uncle Sam – And I'm talking about the federal government, not the American people. I always make that distinction. And again, I don't use the word we did or America did. I put it squarely where it rides, is that the federal government, the arms they've given to Israel and all these other countries, and then they have the nerve to say that they've caught this evil Russian arms dealer. It's just the hypocrisy is just, you know, outrageous.
Yeah, since when does the DEA deal with arms? Isn't that the ATF?
Well, I thought they were more domestic, but, you know, this global drug war, which has just made things so much worse. In fact, this leads into the other things I wanted to speak about tonight, because while the Democrats and Republicans, or should I say the Republicrats and the Demopubs, are all wetting their pants in Washington about what to cut, I have the information how to solve the problem tonight and how to cut a lot of stuff. And what I want to cut is not going to harm private sector Americans for the most part. I don't want to take any of their liberties. I don't want to tax them or regulate them. However, I'm going to put a lot of bureaucrats on the unemployment line. And what I would do for them is all the people that I would get rid of, these agencies I would abolish, I would give all the employees their full salary and benefits for a full year as they look for other things. Because we don't need so many of these things, and I've already mentioned this before, but I'll mention it again. Every state, as I develop my method here, every state already has a Department of Energy, Department of Education, Department of Agriculture. Okay, so we immediately get rid of those federal agencies, including the DEA, because we need to get rid of the drug war, which is it's destroying this country. It's hurt the inner cities terribly. Again, I'm very surprised in all my study that I have seen very few black American leaders and or black intellectuals coming out big time against the drug war. And I really fault the black community for that, because I have not heard their leaders speaking out against this, as much damage as it's done to especially inner city people.
Well, Pastor James David Manning of the Outlaw Church in
who I'm a fan of.
Okay, he's spoken out.
Really, see, I didn't think that I haven't heard that. It doesn't sound like something he would speak against.
Oh, he has, definitely.
But I haven't heard Sharpton or Jesse Jackson. They'll talk about, well, Whitey gets a different sentence for powdered cocaine instead of crack cocaine. They haven't gone to the source of this whole problem, that it's, you know, that it's destroying our liberties, that it causes more crime, more violence, more murder, and it leads to harder drugs.
Yeah. What, are you wanting a comment for me?
Sure. Throw in your two cents, oh great one.
Well, first of all, you started off by talking about the CIA. The drugs are brought into this country by the CIA.
No, they would never do that. You mean, Don, you mean CIA, Cocaine Importation Agency?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they play a big part in it, of course.
It funds the military-industrial complex and all the black ops that they run against the citizens, the internet stalking, the directed energy weapons, underground bases,
the
interplanetary travel.
They use that money from drug sales, I know, to finance things that Congress won't appropriate money for.
Mm-hmm.
So they're heavily involved in it. Of course, they always deny it. In fact, I know it was a TV show, Don, but if you go back to every Mission Impossible episode, you know, towards the end of the intro, it says, and I'm sort of paraphrasing, but it says, as always, if you or any of members of your impossible mission force are detected or arrested, something like that, the secretary will disavow any knowledge of your action. You remember that line?
Mm-hmm.
It was key in every episode. So it reminds me of that old saying. I think it was a British saying that never believe anything until it's officially denied. So in addition to the CIA's involvement in drugs and others or government, people on the gravy train, just back to the destruction that the drug war is causing to our country and the inner cities and innocent people caught in the crossfire, I would do what Harry Brown and Ron Paul said they would do. I would immediately pardon all nonviolent drug drug users or drug, you know, so-called drug criminals, all nonviolent ones, I would immediately pardon all them. I would abolish the DEA, and I would declare an armistice or an end to the drug war. Now, as you know, and I've known you for a long time, let's just look at you or your family. Let's say you and your mother, for example. If drugs are illegal tomorrow, all drugs, are you and mom going to go out tomorrow and shoot heroin and smoke crack? No, it doesn't work that way.
We wouldn't do it whether it was legal or illegal. That's
true. True. Because anybody can pretty much find it, especially if they live near an urban area. And then if you want that horrific crystal meth, that's not only in our cities, it's got a lot of urban, you know, labs going here and there. So I think a lot of the hard drug stuff would fall by the wayside, and a lot of people who used hard drugs initially because, oh, wow, I can take heroin now, I can take cocaine. Well, if they're foolish enough to use it, they're gonna die by the wayside, and then those other people who want to use it, well, they can get it, but they're not going to be shooting at us. They're not going to be robbing stores to get it. The price will fall drastically, and it'll be treated hopefully like alcohol or tobacco, and slightly regulated, and people can get it, but there won't be this huge war in it, and it'll deprive the CIA of a lot of their funding.
Well, it's going to deprive the administration, it's going to deprive the Congress, and it's going
right.
to deprive the Justice Department of a lot of business that they do because of this merry-go-round.
That's a good term for it, a merry-go-round. Yeah, never looked at it that way. But I felt this way for years about this stupid drug war, and I have no desire to use hard drugs. A lot of my friends are potheads, but they don't use hard drugs. And if they sniff a little coke here and there, I mean, that's their business. But they're not criminals. They're not they're not destroying things. They're not shooting. They're not killing. They're not robbing. But this would all be greatly minimized if we got rid of this drug war. And as I understand it, if my numbers are correct, since it really got started, Nixon really kicked it in, it's like a $400 billion failure, if not more. And this brings me back to something I said on the first or second show. Once again, our illustrious federal government, that is Washington, D.C., which not only messes up things in our own country, but worldwide, it has several wars going on. I'll repeat these wars. The war on cancer, the war on crime, the war on AIDS, the war on tobacco, the war on drugs, and, of course, the war on terrorism. So,
and the war on poverty.
Right. Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's a LBJ thing, I think. So all of these things have sucked up trillions of tax dollars to an empty government rat hole, and we haven't won any of those wars. So it's like the fraudulent cancer industry. They're always looking for a cure. They never find one, but they're always looking for the cure. And these other wars that the federal government continues to prosecute, they're always fighting these wars, but they never win. And of course, they don't want to bring these up. So of course, they hate people like me. They don't want to hear what I have to say because I'm sort of a threat to their mindset, and I hope that this wakes up other people, because it's just such a fraud that they're being able to perpetrate on us. Now, the state governments, for example, Springfield, Illinois, or Sacramento, California, they cannot station troops in foreign countries. They do not sell weapons abroad. They're not involved in all these things. That's what the federal government does, and it's such a farce because the federal government has taken control over all the state governments, when it should be, the other way around. It should play a much smaller role. It should be neutered by at least 95% to have its constitutional boundaries intact, and we'd all be just fine. What say you?
Well, I agree. I don't know about the neutering only 95%. There's still a 5% chance that something could go wrong.
Right, right.
So neuter it 100%.
Well, I mean, I don't mind the defense, truly a defense of our country, not stationing troops overseas. I don't mind that. I don't mind the Smithsonian sort of stuff, that sort of thing. And whatever its constitutional duties are, tightly bound, I don't mind those sort of things. But everything else, drug wars, the welfare state, the welfare warfare state, is just – it just continues to feed on itself and grow and grow. And the taxes grow, and they're printing money out of thin air to try to cover what they're doing. So, you know, this all has to stop. There is no reason that this mess has to keep going. And both parties are you know, futile to try to fix the problem. They just bicker amongst each other when meanwhile nothing's gotten done. Well, back to my tax cutting. So we get rid of most of these, as a start, most of these federal agencies. Now, there's going to be a lot of empty federal buildings, which can be auctioned off, and a lot of the clerical workforce will be, you know, over a, maybe hopefully a short amount of time, will be reemployed by the private sector who, you know, would later occupy these buildings, because I care about the regular rank and file people. I do not want to see them thrown out of work. But these bureaucracies have to go, because they're leading to the bankrupting of our country, especially when we don't need them. And of course, they all got their nice federal emblems, and they're all, you know, they're all waving that flag and letting us know how good a job they're doing, especially the TSA, which I have renamed, and I hope that they will also rename themselves TSA, thousands of stupid a-holes, and or thousands of sexual aggressors. And the fact that they're getting away with this just really irks me. I don't have a problem at all with profiling. As much as I'm down on Israel and the Zionism, even they have a better method over there, and they don't treat people like we're treating them here, feeling them all down. I've seen things on YouTube that just really aggravate me, little children being, you know, felt up. And let's look at the history. How many American senior citizens, your mom's a senior, my mom's a senior, okay, people who are in their 70s, 80s, you see these couples, what percentage, if any, of our seniors have been involved in terrorism, have tried to sneak anything through? Is it, you know, less than zero?
Well, it depends if you're counting the guys in Washington and New York and Chicago and Phoenix and Salt Lake City.
Which guys do you mean?
There are plenty of senior citizens in Washington.
Oh, I'm sorry. You mean bureaucrats, government employees?
Well, or appointees, administrators, czars, whatever you want to call them. These self-appointed Henry Kissingers and Zbigniew Brzezinskis.
Well, they all have their private flights, don't they? They're special. But the regular rank and file people are senior citizens. I've seen them wanted and pull over and felt up. I mean, what's that all about? That's ridiculous. And just regular young people, couples, Americans, you know, the black, white, Latin, they have basically no track record of terrorism. And I'm not into demonizing Muslims at all, but I had heard a few years ago that, you know, one of your main profiles would be young Muslim males between 17 and 40. If they're gonna profile those, I don't have a problem with that. But I'm just tired of what they're doing to everybody else and seeing how much people will take. Now, there's been some pushback, but I've seen so many sheeple interviewed, and they say, well, if it's going to prevent a plane from blowing up, I guess, you know. So they're waiting. They're trading their liberty left and right. They're like lambs to the slaughter. I wonder what's next.
Well, I think what you've got going on in the TSA is a false flag event in action. I mentioned this on Drew Rain's show earlier this evening. We were going to talk about this for about 5 minutes. We ended up doing a whole 2-hour show on it. The media never pays attention to anything unless they're told to.
Yeah.
The mainstream media, okay? And they're broadcasting this story about the TSA groping and assaults and profiling and all the stuff they're doing. And they're doing it around the country suddenly on the heels of the election. Basically, it started within a week, maybe a few days after the election. And even though it's a midterm election, the House of Representatives got flipped over almost upside down because of the number. There were over 60 Republicans, or let's say non-Democrats, that were voted into office.
Wow, that's going to fix everything.
Yeah. But while everybody is now sitting back like, well, we did that, we won, we can take it easy, now they're starting this harassment from the TSA under the pretext of national security. Sticking a finger up a three-year-old's private parts is going to make this country a safer place, is what they're saying, and stop attacks against the airlines, when we know in the beginning that the whole pretext for 9/11 and everything that followed was a lie. In fact, we can go to all the other false flag events around the world, the London bombings, the Madrid train bombings, even the ricin attacks many years ago
in Japan.
5,000 people were killed. How come that was silenced? How come the media didn't talk about it? This is going on. This is Illuminati stuff. And in their attempt to create a new world order and to bring us to our knees, they're just being really outside the box with this. But I can tell you that most of the cases we've heard about are planted. They were by design to get the attention that they've gotten.
Well, they keep talking. Yeah, that underwear bomber from last Christmas. Okay, what they fail to talk about, deliberately, of course, is that he was enabled by some Arabic or Indian well-dressed man who got him on that plane without a passport, and then they tried to silence a passenger who made a big deal about that afterwards when the plane made it over, because he was asked the question, why was this going on? I forget who he was, but he noticed that the way they took this guy out, I can't remember exactly how it went, but they gave him some grief, this passenger.
They said something like, we do this all the time. We do this all the time. So he had the complicity of the airlines. There's no doubt about it.
I don't know if it was the airlines or the CIA or, you know, or the FBI, you know, the federal mafia.
That doesn't really matter. It happened overseas. So whoever that responsible agency was at that time allowed it to happen.
Well, I think he got on in Holland.
Yes.
But he was enabled by, as I understand, a nicely dressed, nice-looking Indian or Arabic man.
Well, he was accompanied, yeah.
But how do you get on a plane without a passport, especially nowadays? You know, he didn't have a passport. I mean, that's very simple right there. What's that all about?
Well, the last time they had passports, they found them two blocks away from where planes crashed into buildings.
Oh, yeah, miraculously.
So maybe they didn't want to carry a passport this time.
Well, it goes back to what I've said before. You have the CIA with Britain's version of the CIA, MI6, and Israel's Mossad, and whose mantra is, by deception we make war. And together, those three, they cooperate together, and I believe that they're involved in a lot of this stuff. And it's staged.
I have a question. I don't mean to interrupt. I have a question. Who discovered the bomb in the underwear? How did they discover that?
I don't remember.
We were told the story, but I mean, who, you know, was TSA involved in that? Were they already sticking their hands down people's pants on the planes before they even got here?
You know, I don't think so, and I wish I had the answer, but I really don't know. So, I'm just going to leave it at that. I really don't know. But I know that the thing that really irked me was that this other nicely dressed, nice-looking man who got him on the plane without a passport, that right there, and I'm sure it's on film, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just amazing what they get away with, and the masses, you know, put up with it. Of course, the Internet has changed things, and they can't control people as much as they'd like to. I saw something disappointing. I saw something about this TSA stuff today. I was looking at YouTube, and there was a Marine who had just served in Iraq, and he said he didn't mind them searching children and whatnot, because over there they'll walk up to you with babies with bombs on them and you get blown up. Well, okay, that might be true in Iraq, but that doesn't happen here, or it hasn't happened here. They're not sticking bombs on children here, because this is not a war zone like over there is, or it is a way a war zone with the drug war and this and that, especially the mess they've made in Mexico. But it was kind of disappointing to see a Marine saying that. But it was a different situation on the other side of the world with our war in Iraq, which, again, Iraq stands for Idiotic Republican Authorized Quagmire. or Israel requires American, Israeli acquired, required American quagmire. So that's part of that. But this whole Middle East thing, you know, ties into this too. And speaking of taxes, back to taxes, I would cut off all foreign aid. The U.S. has been paying, I think since the late 70s, also been paying foreign aid to Egypt, so it'll play nice with Israel. Well, I would cut off all foreign aid. I'd say this. I'd give them a year. I'd give all these countries a year and saying from this point on, there is no more U.S. tax-funded foreign aid. However, if American individuals want to write a check to help people here or abroad, they're free to write a check. But there is no more American foreign aid, tax-supported foreign aid that's goes to prop up dictators, drug lords, inefficient industries. Much of the money is siphoned off by dictators or despots, and very little hits the people, gets to the people, which isn't good anyway because it's sort of like global welfare. So I would get rid of all foreign aid. We've done away with the drug war. We've gotten rid of most of the federal bureaucracies. Now, within a year, we will bring all the troops home, all of our troops home from Western Europe, from South Korea, from Japan, and any other foreign bases. They're all now closed, and we welcome the military of those countries, our allies, to staff those former bases with their own troops. And our troops will come home to defend this country, and then many will just go back into civilian life. We don't need a large standing army. We can have our troops trained, but another reason we don't need a large standing army is if our federal government and its tentacles are not stirring up trouble in other countries, then we won't, you know, there won't be such a need for paranoia about defense and defending our country, which I'm all for defending our country. But at the same time, I don't like the federal government being the instigator that it continues to be with other countries and, you know, trying to get the military budget passed, expanding the military-industrial complex, which, again, is sucking away so much taxes, revenue, and precious capital and material from consumer goods and whatnot. So there has to be a huge dent put into the military-industrial congressional complex. I don't really see it happening, but it's definitely the solution. And I doubt if anybody in Congress except Dr. Paul and maybe Rand Paul have the cojones to go down this most necessary path.
Yeah, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on foreign countries. You know, should they be, you know, the word is internationally that they're not very happy with the financial shenanigans going on in Wall Street and in Washington, and especially with the Fed. What do you think foreign countries should do to get the United States into compliance with Basel II, Basel III? Or something even better than that, let's say, because that's their design.
They should get their foreign governments, the foreign countries should get their central banks to disconnect themselves from the Fed, and they should eventually abolish all their central banks, because that is the problem. The Fed has secret agreements. I wonder if they've been involved in bailing out Ireland. They just got $100 billion. I don't know if it's from the European Union. But, you know, the Fed should be completely transparent on its way to dismantling. But, yeah, these central banks, they cooperate together, so that's part of the problem. And maybe the Fed is the leader in this sort of thing. In fact, when I was in England last year, I've been over there many times. I tell my English friends over there, you know, if I was an MP or if I was ahead of your country, the first thing I would do is kick out all of the American bases in Britain. And they were a little stunned to hear me say that, but they mostly agreed, you know. Now, I would rather see those communities staffed with the British forces because, you know, when you get rid of military bases, it affects the local economy. Well, staff them with the British Army, the British Royal Marines and whatnot. But, you know, because, again, this is so expensive for us to defend our rich allies who are then, you know, harming us in trade. So banking is actually one of the number one issues. And Ron Paul is going to have some I think he's got a new chairmanship or something coming up. It has to do with monetary policy and banking. And he's going to put the Fed and Bernanke's feet to the fire more than ever. And he'll have subpoena power, which he's hesitant to use, but it may come up because they're not going to want to cooperate. Yet if you or I got subpoenaed for some big deal, we'd have to cooperate or, you know, face, I don't know, court, jail, prison, who knows. But, you know, not our sacred, enlightened federal leaders.
What do you think will happen with that? You mentioned Ron Paul sort of striking the gavel and calling to order a serious investigation. We have the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, otherwise known as CAFR, and every state, every small town, every city, every county government and state government has a comprehensive annual financial report, and they zero out the books every year. The beginning of the fiscal year, they start from zero, even if there's money in the city's coffers. Let's say the general fund or the water department or the street department, the various agencies that make up the infrastructure of a town.
You mean their budgets?
Yeah, their budgets, okay? They have incoming revenue from levies and bond issues, and this money always seems to be missing before the expiration of that fiscal period for that bond or that levy. And they always say, well, we need more taxes. And they keep those other levies passed. They keep them going. They take more money, more money, more money, more money, and it's never enough. This is a major problem in the school systems. It's a major problem in the city governments and public lands that are being privatized, illegally privatized, and then hedged to either go up or down in value, however they want to play with it. All these assets, and then we've got the mortgages that they're illegally foreclosing on. These are the games that are being played that have to stop. You can't be auditing the Fed and allow all the different governments to be carrying this out. This is nothing but a big scam.
I wasn't that hip to that, but I see where you're coming from. And also, I guess sort of a blanket statement would be these bureaucracies – they judge their success by how much they can enlarge them every year.
Well, this is Admiralty law, which has been converted to what they call the law of the land. It's maritime law on the land.
Well, they've got to learn how to manage money, and they've got to live. You know, my whole thing is they can't raise taxes. They've got to cut spending, and they cannot inflate or borrow. That's where it has to come from. Massive tax cuts. That's how I see it.
You can't borrow money to pay debts and expect to get ahead.
Yeah. You know? Well, they're printing it. Here, we'll print it. We'll give it to you. Here, you got to, you know, we'll expand the credit. We'll create more credit expansion, inflationary credit expansion. Yeah, I'm against all that. And again, the central bank feeds that, and all the banking, you know, the regional banks are all FDIC members. And then the Federal Reserve cooperates with, you know, the Bank of England, the Bank of France, and, you know, behind the scenes, they're the ones that are tweaking things. But, you know, good old China, they're not too happy about this, and they don't want to see this, the U.S. inflating like they are. I think they're going to start devaluing, or they're going to do things that, you know, whenever the Fed's going to create more, well, maybe they'll devalue their yen more or something like this. They're going to start playing this game because they see what's happening. And I'm not going to gang up on China. I mean, I don't like communism or a Marxist government, but the irony of China is there's a lot of sort of capitalism thriving within, despite one of its biggest problems, which is pollution. But, you know, China, I think Japan, they know about, you know, the weakening of the dollar. So, you know, and I fear a collapsed economy in the future. And it seems like the globalists, the New World Order crowd, are in high gear.
Yeah.
You know, more than ever, it seems like.
Well,
and 9/11 has been there. That's their new Cold War. And everything's an excuse. Terrorism is such an open blanket way to spend, to scare people, to increase the military-industrial complex at the expense of the private sector, of the auto industry, of, you know, manufacturing. So I just see it getting even worse. And Obama, you know, he's a very happy player for the globalists. You know, I've already told you my opinion of what I think of who he is. He's just, you know, he's Bush 3 with a makeover on steroids.
He's the second stooge in my Three Stooges Go to Washington series.
Yeah. I mean, again, for our listeners, when I see and hear Obama speak, I don't mind repeating this. I don't see and hear a mixed-race mulatto president. What I see and hear is a smooth-talking lawyer who remains clueless about economics, economic history, and political economy.
Oh, I don't even think he's a lawyer, to tell you the truth. I have to say that.
Well,
there is no evidence that he went to any law school. There isn't.
Well,
okay.
Nevertheless, he's clueless about economics. And just like Bush, Obama serves Wall Street, the big banks, the military-industrial complex, and the Israeli lobby. And he's very happy to be the globalist New World Order or choice. You know, again, he might as well just be a mulatto, blue-blood, skull-and-bones member.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, and this is from my inside sources that tell me that he is not liked amongst foreign leaders. Now, there might
be. You could tell that last week by the cool reception he got in Asia.
Well, that's what I'm referring to.
And they're right.
The things that were said behind the scenes about him, you know, and or advice he was given, like, resign, get out, you're destroying your country. But it's not his country, you see.
Well, the funny thing is that.
That's the point I want to emphasize.
Well, I would like to emphasize on your point that he's also hearing that from his own party, where people are starting to speak up.
Mm-hmm.
Off the record and this and that. It's starting from within. And I knew this would happen. That's why I didn't vote in 2008. And my prediction was I was off by about a year. But my prediction specifically was about a year from now, black America is going to start distancing themselves from this guy. Now, a lot of black America still believes in this guy because he's for an ever-expanding welfare state, and he's got darker skin. So without researching it, they voted for this guy. But I think a lot of black Americans are waking up. See what's going on. It's not a black and white thing. It's a philosophy thing. What about black America's children and grandchildren? How much debt are they going to be faced with? How many wars are their children going to die uselessly in, you know, wasting their lives away? So I think black America's, their wake-up call is slowly coming around.
Well, outside of professional sports and certain entertainment venues, whether it's music or movies or, you know, sports, I would say the average black person is struggling just to make ends meet. I'm not talking about the people on welfare. They've got it made.
The black working class, blue-collar black America.
They get paid for making babies.
Right. Blue-collar America, black America, blue-collar black America, working-class black America.
Yeah. I mean,
and as far as those on welfare making babies, I always make the distinction, and I'm not saying this has nothing to do with your comment. I don't blame the people. I blame the system. The system was set up to get them to be dependent. And you've got all this dependency, which has led to like a 70% illegitimacy rate in the black community. And the black church is very down on this. Bill Cosby's hip to this. Black conservatives know about this.
Mm-hmm.
This is the problem. You know, it's before the huge welfare system, the black family was much more intact. And of course, let's add the horrific effects of the drug war on the black family.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's what undermines the black community is the selling of the drugs and the, you know, enlistment of these gang leaders to become drug dealers.
And another, yeah, correct. And another thing that's fueled all that was urban renewal. Back in the, say, early mid-60s, urban renewal, we're going to help out the inner cities. So what did they do? They bulldozed whole black communities, black-owned businesses, you know, black homes, black-owned homes. Now, some of these homes may have been, you know, substandard, but that's better than nothing. And what did they put in place? They stacked black folks in huge, large, Soviet-style apartment buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the legacy of some of that.
They call them projects.
Projects. And also, this is a subject people a lot of people don't get, but minimum wage laws have thrown a lot of black teenagers out of work and lower-income people. Minimum wage laws work against people. And then you have the same federal government destroying the value of our money at the same time, which hurts low-income people, especially retired people. So that has further hurt the black community.
Mm-hmm.
But the black community, they look to their leaders. Well, a lot of black leaders, you know, you could name a black political leaders, but you can't really name many black economic leaders. What the black community needs is more entrepreneurship and building up itself. And there are black businessmen who are hip to all this, but they sure got a lot going against them. So, that's how I see it. And this ain't got nothing to do with the skin, somebody's skin color. It has to do with the policies that have been enacted. And you've got babies making babies and, you know, second, third generation welfare people. But it's come from what the federal government has caused. And, it's just made it much worse. So it's good that we can talk about this here, because you don't hear this sort of upfront discussion on, national networks.
Mm-hmm. I want to come back to something, because you were talking about the war on drugs, and I never hear the argument about this, and I'm going to make a statement about that.
Uh-oh.
We're in Afghanistan. Why? Okay. Is it about an oil pipeline, or is it about poppy fields?
Well, to my knowledge, Don, it was originally about the pipeline, because they paid the Taliban to crush the opium production, which it did pretty well. Now, as I understand it, in the early, I don't know if it was 2000 or so, early 2001, you had Taliban representatives in Texas dealing with Bush or whatever about this pipeline that the oil companies wanted to put across Afghanistan. Have you heard this?
Yeah, I've heard about that. I'm familiar with that. But
okay, excuse me. Is it true that prior to 9/11, Bush was massing troops on the Afghan border to invade Afghanistan because they refused this pipeline? Have you heard this?
Oh, yeah. The night of 9/11, actually, there was a big explosion that went off. I think I may have mentioned that on a past show with you, certainly on my show.
I think so.
That the night, and somebody had a camera ready to take the picture. Wasn't that interesting?
Yeah, well, I had heard that they were massing troops along that border, so and this had to go with their facilitating of 9/11. I don't understand why they can't just sign a contract. Why they can't negotiate? Why is it such a big deal with oil that they can't just negotiate and sign contracts and then build the contract with voluntary means? They don't do that with other heavy industries.
They have to take over the country, especially because of the poppy fields. Okay?
Well, but other foreign countries, big business, let's say the auto industry, there's not this underhanded civil war and all this stuff if somebody puts a auto plant in another country, but for some reason oil or an oil pipeline has to be this underhanded cloak and dagger go to war kind of mentality, which I don't understand. But meanwhile, China, as Ron Paul has pointed out, they're going to other countries, they're signing contracts, they're making deals. They're not bringing their big military with them.
The profit margin in oil is astronomically more than what it is in the auto industry. That's why.
Okay. Well, they could cut the Taliban in or these other governments and give them a little better taste and save us all this other grief. But I guess they want to play their war games get our troops killed needlessly in these foreign engagements, where if our military people really knew what was going on, if they knew their history, if they knew political economy, I think they'd be outraged. But there is hope, because some of our best and brightest military minds are the veterans against these wars. And I am not a pacifist per se. I'm very pro gun rights. I'm pro defense. I'm pro military as far as defense. So I'm not some wuss who wants to just withdraw from the world. I'm not an isolationist per se. I'm a non-interventionist, which John McCain and company, and they still haven't figured out. There's a big difference between a non-interventionist and an isolationist. I can't be an isolationist because I'm a very strong proponent of free trade. not free trade, to be confused with the World Trade Organization or NAFTA or SHAFTA or CAFTA, all these other globalist schemes.
Well, let me come back to what I was trying to say, because I asked sort of a rhetorical question, and it had to do with the black community. The war on drugs was the issue I was bringing up. We're in Afghanistan primarily because they could run the pipeline anywhere, okay?
Probably, they're
there for the poppy. Now, are the black people in America going over to Afghanistan to illegally acquire drugs, or are the drugs being brought into this country by the CIA?
Well, I'm sure there's black troops over there guarding it.
Yes, but are they bringing it over, or is the CIA doing that?
Well, I would
like
think
they did in Vietnam.
Yeah, I would think the CIA is involved in it underhandedly, and you've got these double agents. You've got Afghans on the payroll. I mean, who knows what's going on? It's just such a gobbledygook mess. I'd hate to be over there, you know. So, yeah, they're in the back door, you know.
Okay, that benefits the military-industrial complex. Now, when you want to take down a society, when you want to especially target people by using racial profiling, okay, taking the drugs and taking them, giving them to the drug dealers. The drug dealers aren't going over to Afghanistan to pick it up, and they're not robbing the Pentagon planes.
No, they're not, Don.
Space or Homestead in Florida, okay?
Right.
All right, so they're getting these drugs into the community, and not just the illegal drugs. They're also selling highly addictive drugs like OxyContin. Those are being sold for $100 a tablet on the streets of Seattle, Washington.
Wow. And, of course, practically every sixth commercial is a pharmaceutical commercial.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is they're intentionally undermining the black community, creating a bunch of drug addicts.
Yeah, well, and the white kids, too. A couple of my friends' kids are using heroin, and they know better. But this junk is available, and, you know, kids who know better are using it. And, I guess I've heard it's even cheaper than it has been. Who knows? But there's plenty of it around. But again, as much as I'm down on hard drugs, I'm more down on the drug war, which makes all this even worse. And the CIA doesn't want the drug war to go away. These government bureaucrats don't, because the politicians and the bureaucrats, they're addicted to the drug war. They like to confiscate people's property. They like to throw people in jail and interfere, you know?
It's its own...
It feeds on itself.
Yeah, it's its own factory business, okay?
That's why I want to secede from the union. I'm very pro-secession, because if we can get states to secede and say the hell with the federal government, starting with nullification, it would be a good path to go down, because there ain't no slavery. And if we can get enough people on our side to see that secession is good, secession is right, secession works, hopefully they'll come along and see that, you know, we don't need this massive federal government. We can do just fine without them, and we can enjoy our liberty, our property, and peace.
Well, now you have this issue of all those that aren't going to want to give up their cushy jobs and all the fringe benefits they get on the side.
Well, they don't have to secede, or they can go to states that don't secede. But the states who do secede, they can come with us. And those cushy jobs will not exist anymore, but they may be attracted by the newer private sector jobs that are created through micro taxes and micro regulations.
Yeah.
Now, there's a word I want to use now that we haven't gotten into, and I just found a good definition of this word by an economist, Donald J. Boudreau. He's an economics professor at George Mason University. It's a definition I really like, and I want our listeners to know this, because this word is being bandied about a lot by the left and Democrats, and it's the word progressive, progressives. You're familiar with that word?
Oh, I've heard it a few times, yes.
Oh, yeah, okay. I'm sure you have. Okay, well, I'm going to give a little definition of it that I really like, okay? Progressives. The very label progressive suggests a forward-looking intelligence, a desire to progress past present superstitions and misinformation into a future enlightened by ideas rather than benighted by ignorance. And because, for progressives, progress is believed always to include a larger role for the state, the hallmark of progressive thinking is in the outpouring of ideas about what government can do. Anyone objecting to the implementation of these ideas is therefore a non-progressive, someone content to allow past habits and irrational notions to interfere with their big, bold, collectively imposed ideas for improving society. How do you like it so far?
Yeah, it sounds like the word infidel.
Yeah. The trouble is, the progressives' understanding of the source of progress is regressive because it reflects an outmoded belief that society advances only if it is consciously designed by well-meaning and smart intellectuals and steered by a beneficent and powerful government. Close quote. So that is a quote of progressives I really like. And once more, let me use Murray Rothbard's definition of progressives, or the progressive era. He says, we already had a progressive era. It gave us the federal income tax, the Federal Reserve System, World War I, and Prohibition. No thanks. We don't want progressives. As an intellectual, I only know two things that are good for society. I would never try to impose my will on society. But the main thing is a true, honest, competitive free market economy with no corporate welfare, no bailouts, no crony capitalism. In other words, a true free market economy. That, and also, as far as our own health goes, diet, nutrition, exercise, and our first line of health care. For me, the way I see society is naturopathy, homeopathy, chiropractic, acupuncture, all this alternative medicine. And then yes, MDs and medical doctors for crisis medicine, but not as a to maintain our lifestyles. So those are the two things that I think I know of what's best for society in terms of these, you know, I'm not a progressive, but in terms of a real free market and in healthcare, these concepts about holistic medicine, that's how I see it. But apart from everything else, I don't know what's better from anybody else, and neither does the government. They can't come up with all this information because millions of people make choices.
Well, I agree. I mean, here you've got a government that's forced the Patriot Act down everybody's throat, and they didn't even read it.
And that
they've never read it.
That SOB Michael Chertoff, who was part of that, who pushed that, he was a former head of Homeland Security. He is the one behind all these imaging machines in the airports. His firm is representing these companies who do this. He's big on the take. He's pushing this stuff. Well, of course, he and his crowd, you know, and they ride on their private planes or their private jets. And he is yet another one of these neocons, these neoconservatives. He is an Israeli citizen. He has dual citizenship of U.S. and Israel. So these people come and go, and they've got their boot on America's neck, and they're heavily infiltrated our government.
Yeah,
I talked about this before.
That
there's
couldn't
a person,
be lawful.
Oh, I know. They're especially Israeli U.S. Dual passports. Just awful. One of the best people I've come across, who you might be hip to this guy. He's on YouTube. His name is Brother Nathaniel Kapner, K-A-P-N-E-R. He dresses in the garb of the East Orthodox Catholic Church, sort of, but he was raised Jewish and he became a Christian. Now he's very Christian, and but he has all these videos, and he really tells it like it is about how he's raised as a Jew, what his teachings were, and how he came to embrace Christianity. But mainly, more important than that, is how he sees what Zionism is doing in our country and within our country. And he's not a hater, because he's Jewish. He has a Jewish background, but he converted to Christianity, which was one of the worst things that a Jew can do, by the way, is to convert to Christianity. You know, and I'm not religious in any terms, so I can step back and look at this and say, Brother Kapner, what you say is very interesting. So I urge our listeners to check him out. Also, Norman Finkelstein, these anti-Zionist Jews deserve to be heard, and especially Jews United Against Zionism. And I'm a big fan of Rabbi Dovid Weiss. I believe it's Dovidweiss, because I still see the solution for the Middle East is that we find immediate common ground with Jews against united against Zionism. That is, Jews united against Zionism, the Israeli human rights groups, and Israeli peace groups, peace movement. That is where the link should be, as I see it.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with Henry Macau?
Yes, I'm a fan of his. He's also a Jewish person who writes anti-Zionistic things. And, you know, these are Jewish intellectuals that you can have a conversation with, and you don't immediately get, oh, you're anti-Semitic, you're a hater, because – because these are the people that the Zionist hierarchy immediately calls, of course, it was always self-hating Jews, and then it became anti-Semitic Jews. Well, you know, that's like calling a very black, dark-skinned black person, telling them that he's a racist against black people, you know, unless he's advocating their murder or genocide. But, you know, it's ridiculous, and that's what you run into all the way. But Mr. Teflon here, I won't put up with that crap. So that's what's coming down. And yes, I am a friend of Henry Macau. Is it Macau? Is it Makow?
Yeah, some pronounce it Macau, others Macau.
Yeah, I'm a fan of his. And again, Brother Kapner and Rabbi Dovid Weiss, who says that it is totally wrong to have a Jewish Zionist state. That's not what the Bible says. And the problem is that these Zionists like Michael Chertoff and the other crowd of Richard Pearl and Paul Wolfowitz, these are Talmudic Jews. They are not the Torah Jews. The Talmud is a very racist, anti-Gentile book of Jewish law. It's thousands of years old, but it's very hateful, and it's an awful set of books. And it is not the Old Testament. It is not the book of the true Jewish people. Well, I guess this makes me a hater for saying this.
Well, they
I guess
the Goyim.
The Goyim, yes. I guess, well, I've just been giving this description about my anti-Zionist views. I guess I've also been saying how much I hate these people and they should be destroyed. Oh, gee, I haven't done that. Gee, that's not where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Well, I hear that music.
Well, you can wrap up. We still have about a minute and a half, if you want to depart with a closing word, and I'll just listen.
Okay, well, thank you, Don. Thanks for your help.
Thanks for having me on. Glad everything's working out. You sound great.
Well, how am I doing?
Oh, you're doing just great.
Am I not a wealth of knowledge?
You'll know when the choppers start circling over your house, okay?
Yeah, all in the name of patriotism. But in the meantime, I'd like to thank again BBS Radio for the opportunity to bring you my views. And I'm here every Monday night, 9 p.m. Pacific, 12 midnight Eastern, and 11 p.m. Central. So thanks again to all our listeners for tuning in, and I bid you all a good evening.
Won't you take the message to my sister and my brother? You will find me most everywhere. Wherever people are living together, you see they're all tied up. Poverty and disease.